First and Now, the official BC Lions podcast. I know it's the highlight of everybody's Wednesday when this new podcast episode drops in your app, wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, wherever. Matt Baker, Nick Kowalski, and rinse, repeat, right? Another short week. That's fine. We get to focus on it right when the other game ends. That's what I like about it. BC Lions hosting the Edmonton Elks. Purolator tackle hunger. More on that and the special themes around it. But Nicky, the Bombers may have been depleted. They may have been injured. They may have got more injured as the game went on. But still feels damn good to come out of Princess Auto Stadium. Not quite used to that yet, by the way. To come out of there with a win is key. Big swing game. Lions with a four-point cushion on the Bombers through 3 weeks with a win in the tiebreaker under their belt as well.
Yeah, man, that felt good. You know, there was kind of that similar feeling, right, where the crowd's getting loud in the fourth quarter. We're trailing 5 minutes to go specifically in this game, and I'm thinking in my head on the sideline, like, I've seen this story before. The crowd singing Sweet Caroline like they always do in the fourth quarter. Yeah. It's loud. And we pull it off. Sean White, Vernon Adams Jr., Alex Hollins with the dagger. I mean, it felt good. There was it was a pretty hostile crowd, as always. Definitely some bad eggs in there, if you ask some of our employees about some of the shenanigans that went down in the, with the fans. But it felt good shutting that crowd up, keeping Winnipeg winless, keeping them in the bottom of the standings, and looking to rinse and repeat that formula this week, right?
Yeah, Stephen Chang... A milestone for him. Well, for all, it's never happened to me yet, knock on wood. You never know. Chang got pelted with a beer, for those wondering what we're talking about.
I've been hit by a beer as a fan in Regina.
Okay.
At a Labor Day game, yeah. So I try not to associate entire fan bases with
the behavior
of a couple bad eggs, but...
Some venues are more consistent with the pinhead factor.
Yes.
And Winnipeg, major pinhead factor.
There's
Winnipeg.
Great fans there, and there's also a lot of bad fans there. I've been told that Winnipeg is now 2-for-2 in not only losing their home games this season, but also throwing beers at employees of the away team.
Well, who got it the first time?
I heard somebody on Montreal
really?
Got it, yeah.
Okay.
An employee.
My big thing is it's complete garbage for one, but why would you waste a $14 beer on an innocent employee from the other team?
Probably mad their team's losing.
Yeah.
Leave it at that.
Winnipeg, pinheads, they go hand in hand. August 1st, bring it on, people. We ain't scared. They not like us because our fans are more classy. They not like us. All right, moving forward from that. Batman, Hollins, 215 yards. It's up. I sent out a story and a release today on his PFF. Highest graded receiver fell just short of McLeod Bethel Thompson, this week's opponent for the Elks for player of the week. But 13th highest single game total in Lion history. The first since Nick Moore in 2017. The crazy Travis Lule coming off the bench game in Hamilton. The crazy one. It was a career night for Lule and a career night for Nick Moore. So it's rare and just great to see him. That final catch he made to pretty much seal the deal when the Lions were pinned back spoke volumes. Winnipeg sent a blitz. VA read it perfectly and Hollins was open as a result of that blitz. So great performance from Hollins.
Yeah, we were talking about this going into the game and Alex himself admitted that he told coach offensive coordinator Jordan Maximek that he felt like
he was
going to
go for it. Yeah,
I mean, I had that. I swear, I had that same exact thought. You can ask Steven before the game. No offense to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers defense, but I mean, it's no secret that they're injured right now. They got some new defensive backs to begin with, and I'm looking at it saying like, Alex Hollins and Justin McInnes have to just beat these guys. They're just quite frankly better. And I think Alex Hollins right now, he's definitely right in the prime of his career. It's year three for him here in BC. I'm on record too. You can ask Liam Thompson with this, but I've never floated this take up publicly. I thought maybe it'd be a little too arrogant, but I don't see why Alex Hollins can't go for 2,000 receiving yards this year. He's on pace to go way
above
over that right now.
He's over 400 right now. So,
he's on pace for 2,400 right now. So I think he definitely has that 2,000 yard potential. It also speaks to the fact that, you know, Keon Hatcher's out right now. That's kind of why I had that opinion, because Hollins is going to eat up those yards before Hatch comes back. But I mean, VA and Hollins have that special chemistry. Hollins is such a deep threat. threat. He's quicker, better route runner. Everyone on the team will tell you he is the best route runner on this team from day one. I remember when Lucky Whitehead and Dominic Rams were here, they were still saying, yeah, it's Hollins that can run routes like anybody on this team. So, yeah, the bat signal was there, and Batman delivered, as VA said.
Yeah, that Batman thing is I love it. It's caught on. It's caught on real well. Still some things to fix, no doubt. Seeing your notes here, 0 for 4 in the red zone. Maybe that's a little tainted because the fourth time they took the knee on the one to kill the clock, right? But still, the Hollins' first touchdown opening drive. Second and third drives, they go down the field again, only to be stopped. I think 14 and 12 were the White field goal distances on the second and third drives. And there was another one where he had to kick one. I think it was his first field goal of the fourth quarter came inside the red zone. Turnovers, yeah, it's rare you go into that place, lose the turnover battle, and win the game, but that's what happened. That Travis Fulgham fumble right before halftime, I thought, okay, here we go. This was a chance to put up some points, never mind a field goal. They were going to go score a touchdown, I thought, before that happened. Would have given them, I think, a 20-7 lead at halftime. But then yep. Winnipeg had their own clock management issues before the half. Travis Fulgham, of course, since released by the team. I think that just more than anything speaks to the American depth they're happy with at the receiver position. So, and Rick Campbell said it. Again, VA said it as well. We're not content yet here. And we've got a very hungry Edmonton Elks squad coming in who probably feels that they've deserved a better fate than two or perhaps all three of their losses here so far.
Yeah, that's a good note about the things to fix. The red zone thing definitely stands out. I remember, you're right, I was thinking in the second quarter there, it was 13-7, and I'm like, how is it only 13-7 right now? Like, how is it a one-possession game? And I'm doing my circles and talking under my breath on the sideline there. Like, how? Like, it just feels like we've been in this situation before, and it felt good to claw that one out. You know, people are definitely giving Vernon his flowers now, which we've been banging that drum for ever since he got here and won that game in McMahon in 2022, that he was definitely going to be a QB1 for us. So, yeah, moving ahead now, stuff to fix. You know, the defense, we still give up a couple 300 yards on total offense in the win, and although we put up 500 to kind of negate that, but it felt good. And one final stat I noticed too that I wanted to get down here is with Winnipeg, or going to Winnipeg. So since 2019 is when this kind of like unofficial D word for Winnipeg's kind of started, right? Like, kind of, that's how it got sparked in 2019. Mm-hmm. So since 2019, BC has played Winnipeg 14 times. BC is 0-8 when their top rusher has fewer than 50 rushing yards. They're 3-2 when their top rusher has over 50 yards or hits 50 yards. So
yeah,
there's a key right there. William Stanback with
balance.
83.
Yeah.
Dagger at the end of the game. Talked about it last week that having Stanback as his addition would prove vital. And I think right there it showed that, you know, this might be a different Lions team this year coming on in these big moments.
Yeah, Stanback went for 85.
83, I think.
Yeah, but he earns every single one of those yards.
Yep.
So, yep, love the Stanback number 31 in your digital program, which we always love producing content for each and every home game. We have to mention VA, the latest with him. A bit of a surprise when we got to the office this morning to find out that he would not be practicing. He was out there in his practice gear, did not take part, woke up with some abdominal soreness. Rick Campbell, you can head to our YouTube page, bclions.com. We spoke with him, or the Moj spoke with him.
Exclusive, yeah.
He was gracious enough, Moj, to let us film the interview and post it on our content channels. Moj, always an outstanding team player that way. But I think Rick Campbell's exact quote was, he's optimistic, above 50-50, that he'll still suit up. So he'll officially be a game-time decision when the depth chart drops, probably mid to late morning on Wednesday. And questionable on the injury report. So, precaution. They feel they can afford to keep him. But again, he was out there. You know, as we speak, as we talk about this, he's watching film. He's meeting back there with the quarterbacks and Jordan Maksimek, Jason Tucker and company right now. So it's not like he's been totally absent. And we'll just hope for the best that there's no setback and all goes according to plan. He'll suit up.
Yeah, and some other good news too, at least on the flip side coming this week with Javon Kotoy being a full participant.
Yes.
Obviously missed last week with another hamstring issue, so he looks to be good to go. Ben Haladic, maybe not. He hasn't practiced this week with his thumb injury, right? So that opens the door for Bolakombo and even Ryder Varga to get more snaps, right? And I know Bolakombo, he's only played 29 snaps this year. Like Ben and Josh
right.
have kind of been full-time a go at the Will and the Mike positions, right? But Bolakombo is definitely someone who's proven capable in the situation if called upon as a starter. And like I just said earlier, I think it kind of opens the door for Ryder Varga to get more snaps too. And I think that's only a good thing too, right? Ryder,
yeah.
I think, is someone with a ton of potential, right? But just kind of a victim of all this Canadian depth and the upbringing of Josh Woods too, right?
Yeah, we've talked glowingly about this depth at linebacker. That's certainly going to be tested. We're going to get a breakdown on the Elks from Dave Campbell, the longtime radio analyst on 630 CHED. Perhaps get his thoughts on Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, the city of Edmonton. Can we say in mourning? Probably. It's funny that you come back down from 0-3 and Game 7, anything can happen. If you're an Oilers fan, you're probably optimistic that they were going to come out of Florida with the Stanley Cup. Game 7 was great theater, by the way. Just outstanding theater. I was hoping for overtime, but not always that those Game 7s live up to the billing, and this one did. But we'll talk to Dave maybe a little about the Oilers, see how his work life has been the past couple of months. We've been home from Kamloops for a month, and we were there for the entire Canucks-Oilers second-round series. But before we bring Dave in, just a little bit more on this game. This is going to be a big test. McLeod Bethel-Thompson's been moving the ball really well. They've got a couple of elite receivers. Their running game may be a little underperforming so far, but that's going to be a good test.
I mean, they're 0-3, but it really doesn't feel like it. I know it's not really what you want to hear if you're an Edmonton Elks fan that you're still winless. But yeah, they've looked dangerous on offense. You know, putting up 36 points against the Argos last week was very impressive. Definitely some things still to work out on their defense, they'll admit, right? Giving up 39. And where I look at, I mean, the big area for me in this game, at least from the Lions' perspective, is the Lions got to hit on the big plays.
Yes.
Edmonton's been so vulnerable these 3 weeks. Seems like, I think they are in front of me, they've given up 9, which is by big play is like a 20-yard rush or a 30-yard pass or even a big return count. So they've already given up 9 in 3 games, and a lot of them are going for 6 points. And on the flip side with BC, we just saw last week, Vernon Adams Jr., Alex Hollins, Justin McInnes. I mean, Travis Fulgham had a 50-yard touchdown in week 1, right? So
yeah.
This offense, they can hit the big play. I mean, it's written in the quarterback's name, right? Big play VA. And this Elks defense right now is showing a vulnerability to the big play. So that's one area I'm really keying on. But yeah, like the Elks offense is nothing to brush off. Like they're going to come ready, and they have some weapons there too.
And we should remind everyone coming to the game, a very special program as always, Purolator Tackle Hunger. Food bank usage has gone up greatly in this city, in this province, so over the past 5-6 years. So bring cash, non-perishable food items to donate at Terry Fox Plaza, and you get your picture taken with the Grey Cup, BC Lions and Edmonton Elks, 7 o'clock Thursday, the game, a presentation of Purolator, and I look forward to contributing to such an important and great cause that the BC Lions are proud to support. What is the mood in Edmonton, whether it's the Elks or the Oilers coming up short? We'll have to hit on everything. Dave Campbell, radio analyst for Edmonton on 630 CHED, will join us coming up on First and Now. And it's our great pleasure to welcome to First and Now the longtime, and we mean longtime, radio analyst for the Edmonton Elks, 630 CHED, is involved with their evening show, and I'm sure it's been quite a busy couple of months, I would say, not just for football, for Dave Campbell with us here on the podcast. Dave, you get any sleep last night? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bleary-eyed here in Edmonton. You know, I watched the game, and then, you know, I got to do my prep for Thursday's game. It's a very short turnaround for the Elks. We were in Toronto on Saturday and a long flight home, and then it's a short flight to Vancouver and play on Thursday. So, yeah, it's no rest for the whatever you want to call it. So, yep, it's been a busy couple months, like you said. It's been fun. It's always great when the Oilers are on a deep run and the Elks are starting. And now, you know, obviously it's going to get a little less busy for some, but I will still be quite busy with the football team, of course.
Yeah, for guys like us who don't play, we feel it with these short weeks. This is our third one in a row to start the season. Thankfully, we get the mini bye week, we call it, after this, because we won't be back at it until a week from Sunday in Hamilton. But hey, before we talk about the game, I mean, we're kind of alluding to it here. You've been on the radio scene in that city for a long time. You've covered a lot of bad Oiler teams as well as some good ones. Describe it in a few words. What was it like? You know, the euphoria in the city. We saw that here firsthand in 2011. It's been a while. Game 7 loss as well. But how do you describe, you know, from a working perspective, how exciting it gets?
Well, you know, I may say some phrases or words that might make people eye roll, but I mean, honestly, and until you live here and experience it, I mean, it was quite the story. I mean, it was a storybook kind of thing. It was it was magical. It was euphoric. It was, you know, just learning about adversity and how a group of individuals overcome that, right? And 2-9-1 start, 31st in the league. They're done in November. They're not going to make the playoffs. Forget it. Make a coaching change. Chris Knobloch comes in. They lose 3 games in a row, look awful in Carolina. And then they go on this crazy heater, 8 games in a row, lose 3 again. Then they go on a 16-game run, win streak. And then they make it to the playoffs and down 2-1 and 3-2 to Vancouver, down 2-1 to the Stars in the West Final, down 3-0 to the Panthers, losing game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final. Just a remarkable story of adversity and a team that believed, a coach that believed in them, a captain in Connor McDavid, who I think grew a few inches taller, and a group that's hungry. And, you know, it's special. It was honestly an honor to watch this team this year. And it sounds maybe a little hokey, but it was, you know, I don't know how many other, probably not too many fans in Vancouver cheering for the Oilers, but I think they probably captured a few hearts across the country. But yeah, it's just, you know, that thrill of victory and agony of defeat. And it was really neat for fans who don't really remember 2006 and who wouldn't remember Todd Marchant winning in overtime over Dallas in 97. And those who don't remember the 80s or that 90 win, this was a special time. And, you know, I say in 2006, they weren't supposed to be in the Stanley Cup. They're a contender now, and it'll be fun to see them, the rivalry with the Canucks, because I think they'll get better, and the Pacific will get, you know, the Pacific is a monster of a division. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was, you know, they didn't finish the story. Maybe that comes later, but they were one heck of a story this year.
Yeah, no doubt they'll be knocking on the door again. And yeah, we were in Kamloops for training camp for that entire Canucks Oilers series. Added a little extra fun to the training camp routine, having some actual Canuck playoff games to watch in May. That never happened in training camp since I've been doing this Lions job. But anyway, shifting gears, there is a big football game to talk about. Edmonton Elks, just like the Oilers not too long ago, 0-3. But I think there's some promise with your football team there. I know you don't get any, there's no moral victories, you know that, but what positivities can the Elks hang their hat on right now as they look to get in the win column?
Yeah, it's hard for an organization that has lost way too many football games over the last, you know, almost 3 seasons. And under the Chris Jones era, it's only 11 wins, I believe, or 8 wins, if I'm correct, and 31 losses. So that's a lot of losing. This team does show a lot more promise, I would say, especially on offense. You know, McLeod Bethel-Thompson, it was a bit of a controversial signing just because of, you know, what Trey Ford did in his 10 starts last year, going 4-6 as a starter and 4-2 in the first 6 games. And a lot of people were like, why would you go to McLeod Bethel-Thompson? Well, because he's experienced and he's won before, and he's been money. I mean, he's, you know, 300-yard passing games. His best performance of them all was on Saturday in that loss in Toronto, 39-36. But he's come as advertised, and he's been, you know, a treat to watch the quarterback position, a good set of receivers, not running the ball very well, but, you know, they got MBT, who gets the ball out fast. And You know, on defense, they've shown flashes and they've actually played some long stretches of good football, but then they've given up too much as far as big plays go. And I tweeted it out, I think, on Sunday. They've given up 12 touchdowns, offensive touchdowns. Seven have been through big plays or explosions. And they're struggling with the run game on the perimeter, and they're struggling with getting pressure to the quarterback. And, you know, they have good games, good stretches in games, and really bad stretches in games. And that's been really uneven. Special teams, you know, Javon Leak has been getting better every week. Boris Beattie is someone that you can really count on and rely on in the field goal game. Their cover units, it's been up and down.
Work in progress. Yeah.
Work in progress. But, you know, they played three games that they could have won. I mean, they could have been 3-0, they could be 3-0 by now. They could be 2-1. But sometimes you don't get what you deserve necessarily, and you can play well and lose. And unfortunately, you know, we're here again. We're, you know, they're 0-3, and people are like throwing flowers on them and saying, well, this is a great 3-0 team, or 0-3 team, sorry. And you just don't want to hear that, right? You just want to hear, we got to win, and we got to find a way to win games. And I think that's the next step here, is win games. I think there's some winnable games coming up. I think any game you play almost is winnable. You just got to do the right things in a game to allow you to win.
No, I echo that too, Dave. From an offensive perspective, they've definitely looked more dangerous. And the receiver room, I'm really curious to get your thoughts on it. Like, what's the kind of the dynamic this season been like? Because, you know, Geno Lewis is that bona fide number one. There's all this hype around Curley Gittens Jr. He's been delivering too. But then Dylan Mitchell is leading the team in yards and 13 yards a catch right now. So, I mean, is that kind of how you see it? Like, they're all going to get their moments, or is there a number one right now? Or how do you see things shaking out right now?
Yeah, it's hard to look at them and say there's a true one right now. And I think, you know, Geno Lewis was the one player where you said, okay, he's one for sure. And then after that, I mean, take your pick. You know, at the time, Kyron Moore was healthy. He's coming off a pretty good year last year in a tough season. But when you look at it now, I mean, it's clear that McLeod Bethel-Thompson and Curley Gittens Jr. have this great chemistry. I call Gittens Jr. kind of the Julian Edelman of the CFL, where he just finds open space. He's there, or he's, you know, all of a sudden flash, he's there and finds open spaces and can, you know, anywhere on the field, he is dangerous. And that's a comfort level for McLeod. And I think that's helped McLeod. So he's trying to get the ball to Geno Lewis. I mean, he had 3 catches on 9 targets in Toronto, including a touchdown. So they're trying to get the ball to Geno. And then there's Dylan Mitchell, like you said. I mean, he had a terrible year last year. Like, there's just no other way to say it. Just a terrible year. He did get 4 touchdowns, but he had less yards in 18 games than he had in, I think, 8 starts in 2022 in the last 8 games. And just, he wasn't himself. So here he is. He comes to training camp. He's with the starting group. Then he gets hurt. And then he is just watching. And, you know, he didn't leave the field at all. You know, he's doing individual drills, but couldn't do any of the, you know, the offense versus defense, the 12-on-12s or the Skellies, and then misses the first game where, you know, at home against the Riders, where starters play a lot, and they played a half. So he's watching that. So he gets into the game, the final game in Vancouver against the Lions. He's fighting for a job, and he catches a touchdown pass in the first quarter, I think, from Jarrett Daigie, who was the starter that day at quarterback for the Elks. Then he gets pulled fast, and you're like, he's made the team. He found a way to make the team. And now he's, like you say, Nick, he's the 4th leading receiver in the CFL. One thing that impresses me about McLeod is the ability to go past 20 yards and get completions, you know? So, you know, that's getting much better, I think. And it really went off on Saturday in that direction against the Argos. So, he threw to 7 different receivers, you know, Herji Maiala, who sadly won't play on Thursday, but he's got 3 touchdowns in 3 games. And he came to camp. No one knew what his role was going to be. More of a insurance policy at the start, because we didn't know if Curley Gittens was going to be healthy, because he's coming off that major hip surgery. Well, he didn't miss anything in training camp, or, you know, he played that one game, and Herji Maiala wins a job, for goodness sake. So he's not going to play. So we're going to see Gavin Cobb, the hometown boy, in the Vancouver area on Thursday. So McLeod has been a wonderful treat to watch, how he leads his group, how he executes plays. His standard is high. I would say he's been the best quarterback since a gentleman by the name of Michael Riley played here.
Definitely, but I know they came on the wrong side of that 39-36 shootout last week, and that's obviously a concern, giving up 39 points. But and you look at that defense, too. Outside of what, Luchez, Purifoy, Niles Morgan, maybe Kai Gray, if you're a big CFL fan, there really isn't that those well-known names in this defense, right? But through 3 weeks, have there been any of these new names that have stuck out to you?
I have liked Elliot Brown up front as a defensive end. Now, he's kind of like that A.C. Leonard type, Odell Willis type, who will drop into coverage and will rush from depth, and he's very quick. And he has, I believe, 3 sacks or 2 sacks in 3 games, I think. And, you notice 41 a lot. But other than that, their D-line, it's been hit and miss. You know, Noah Curtis is tied for the league in sacks with 3. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say Noah has been overly impactful or, you know, is noticeable, but he's got 3 sacks. So that's been impressive. But yeah, I don't think their edge play from a rush end standpoint, it's been very, other than Elliot Brown, they haven't got much. You know, they started Tony Alfano, their dispersal draft pick from training camp on Saturday. And, you know, I thought as the game went longer, he got better. But, you know, Romeo McKnight had a good training camp, the ex-Stampeder. And, you know, I don't think he's done a lot or in the one game that he played. Robert Gandici is, you know, former first-round draft pick of the Arizona Cardinals. He's been up and down. Sam Achenpong, same thing. So there's no real, I would say, player that really pops, even though Noah Curtis does, you know, is tied for the league in sacks. Elliot Brown, to me, has been their best player. Their linebacker play actually hasn't been that bad. I think Niles Morgan is back to kind of his form. But he's got 2 rookies. He's got Leon O'Neal Jr. at his Sam backer, and then he got Nick Anderson, who was a great run stopper out of Tulane, as the will backer. And you're right, Kai Gray is the short side corner. Marcus Lewis is the wide side corner. He was good last year. He had 4 interceptions in limited time before he suffered an injury, a game against the Lions in late September. You know, Kai hasn't played, I think, as well as he did last year as a rookie nominee out of the West. Darius Bratton, I think, has played well. Luchas Purifoy has played well. And then it's really, it's, you know, they've been going back and forth between Cordell Jackson and Devondrick Bynum at the strong half position, and Bynum will get the start again. So they're just looking for some consistency, but and that's the key, is just consistency, you know. And I think this team overall has not played enough better 4-quarter ball, but not enough 3-phase ball.
If you were told at this stage you'd be tied with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, you might have been excited, but unfortunately, talking about 0-3 Hamilton out east and watching that game in Saskatchewan on Sunday night, he's for the second straight week, Hamilton had a chance to make it a perfect week in the West for us. And again, which of these 0-3 teams, Dave, do you think has the best chance of perhaps going on a run here?
Well, I would have to say it's the Bombers, but although, I mean, they're injured a lot. Like they've lost, yeah, what, 3 starting receivers. So that knocks them back. Bolivai Mitchell is so inconsistent. And I don't know. Like, I think it's the Elks in some ways.
Yeah.
And you look, there are winnable games coming up, especially after their bye week. They got home and home with Ottawa, then a game at home against the Tiger Cats. And then they play the Riders again. And the Riders, I'm not sure about. I mean, I know they're getting off the good start. Full marks. That's great. I don't know. I'm not sure if I totally believe that's going to be sustainable, although it's a good start. The thing for me is that, so the Elks are 0-3. So are the Bombers. The Stampeders are 1-1. And I'll even throw the Lions in there. They're 2-1. If the Elks find a way to win on Thursday, all right, they put themselves a game back of the Lions.
It's a log jam. Yeah.
Depending on what happens between Calgary and Winnipeg, they would put themselves, you know, even, or they could be above a team if Winnipeg loses. So it's there early, right? It's there. The thing that has hurt this team the last 2 seasons is they get off to these bad starts, and this is another bad start. But the difference is that the teams they were chasing ran away from them early. And that's not happening this time. So this team is so close to winning. It's just, it's painful when they lose, because you know that, man, they were honestly that phrase 4 or 5 plays away from winning. You know, sometimes it's less than that for this team.
Moving ahead to Thursday, what are one or two things you're looking for and curious how the Elks are going to handle this Lions team?
Well, how are they going to handle Vernon Adams, you know, and his, I mean, to me, he's the best player in the league. You know, I voted him number one in the TSN top 50 on my ballot. He was number one. All those weapons, you know, Hollins, McInnes, there's a good group there. William Standback still to me is a very quality back, a defense that's playing better. But to me, it's all about Vernon Adams, you know, and how they can control Vernon. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And, I just know this, the last couple seasons or so, it has not been fun for the Elks to be in that facility at BC Play Stadium against the Lions. So maybe they can buck the trend now.
Well, you missed the concert kickoff this year, so maybe that's a good omen. But anyway, you missed the best one yet. You got a petition. You got to petition Ambrosi and the powers that be to get back to that tradition next year. Dave, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate you coming on. And after Thursday, try and get a little sleep after your 2-month grind there. So keep up the great work, and we always look forward to seeing you.
Matt, Nick, great to talk to you. We'll see you on Thursday, okay?
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Safe travels.
Love talking football with that guy, our pal Dave Campbell. He, alongside Morley Scott, provide the audio broadcast for the Edmonton Elks on 630 CHED, affiliate station on the Chorus Network of 980 CKNW. Love how the Chorus stations over the years have gotten back into sports. Wasn't the case for a while when TSN radio was more of a thing nationwide. In fact, CJOB in Winnipeg, they got the rights to the Winnipeg Jets back a few years ago now.
Yep.
Before TSN radio, unfortunately, went under there. And when that happened, I remember thinking, okay, is Chorus making a comeback here in the sports game? It's good. You know, I'm a guy who once lost my job at TSN radio. I don't wish the job loss on anybody at all, but these are heritage brands, heritage radio stations. So great to hear those guys in Edmonton as well doing their thing. There are a couple things that stood out with the Elks you wanted to get in here.
Well, like we talked about their big name receivers, right? I mean, Dylan Mitchell has 274 yards for Edmonton. It's no Alex Hollins with his 400, but Mitchell even dropped a touchdown in week two. I was watching their week two loss to Montreal. He dropped potentially a game-winning or game-changing touchdown in the third quarter for Edmonton. And it's one of those examples of how if that one play shifts, like they could, there's a win column over the Alouettes. And they played, obviously, Saskatchewan really close in week one too, right? So there's definitely a lot of weapons. I remember last year was kind of like, okay, they got Geno Lewis. He got his own in on. The year before, I remember Kenny Lawler was on the Elks in 2022. He was the guy he had his own in on. But now it's Geno's still there. He found the end zone last week. Curley Gittens Jr., like Dave was talking about, is everyone's been glowing over their connection he has with McLeod Bethel-Thompson. And we talked about too with Dave, Kevin Brown, the running back, he's been really quiet, and he's someone who
he can break out anytime.
Yeah, 6 yards a carry in his career before this season. So, I don't know, 39-36 again. I'm not really down for that, but
I'm going 30-25 somewhere in there.
Can't take this to Elks team lightly is kind of the.
I mean, this Lions defense gave up some yards to Zach Caleros and Chris Streveler and company. Brady Oliveira doing his thing. So
that's a challenge for Ryan Phillips, I think, right?
Yeah. I'm not expecting a Nathan Rourke 59-15 blowout here.
Those days are over, yeah.
Yeah, you're on to something, I would say. So
it'll be competitive, yeah. And at the same time, we were talking about the Elks allowing all these big plays. BC, or we're second in the league, whereas Edmonton's, I think Edmonton's eighth. Winnipeg's actually a lot more, thanks to us. But that just shows that while Ryan Phillips, it is kind of that bend-don't-break mold. But I know they're wanting to improve too and getting more consistent continuity in that defensive backfield.
Battle of the top two passers. MBT is right behind VA. Again, assuming VA has no setbacks officially listed as questionable. It's the lead story on CFL.ca right now. So, you know it's a story.
MBT has a couple demons here, though, too. Remember the last time he was here?
44-3, right?
Yeah, 2022, yeah.
Yeah.
Infamous post-game interview, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Look it up if you don't know.
Oh, yeah. It's a little inside joke. Well, not really, because it's out there. But, yeah, MBT had a funny exchange with one of the... Because those are the days we were still doing it. Everyone was doing Zoom on the road.
Yeah.
So that was... That was a. It was on.
Lost in translation.
The fact it was on Zoom made it even more funny. I gotta recompose myself now. Yeah, that's good stuff. So,
but should be a good one. Thursday Night Football for the first time in BC play since 2022, since Dean Evans Tiger Cats came here.
That's right. We did the Thursday preseason was our home game last year against the Kieran Burnham walk off. Was that the one?
Yep.
Yeah. So, yep,
but. Excited.
Good point.
It's going to be a little different, be a little fun. Everything's all normal with the tailgate parties going on beforehand. So.
Yeah, backyard party at 4, $5 Molson Coors. There's a build-your-own Caesar bar, too.
I noticed. I'll pass on that. I'm not a Caesar guy, unfortunately, but I know a lot of people are.
So maybe for breakfast sometimes. And then reminder, Purolator Tackle Hunger, food and cash for local food banks. Get your picture with the Grey Cup. So on to Friday, we'll quickly preview the other games before we wrap it up with a little go for it or punt. Eastern final rematch, battle of the unbeatens, 2-0 Toronto, 3-0 Montreal. The Argos getting a third home game to start with a bye in between. I'm planning my Friday night around watching this one.
Yeah.
We're talking about the watermelon smash in a couple of weeks. We're hosting the Riders, could potentially be a first place battle. We won't worry about it yet, but this has similar implications as far as whoever wins this could be ahead of the game in the East for a long time.
And I think that the tide has shifted a little bit. Obviously, the Grey Cup and the East final wins help for Montreal, but the tide has kind of shifted to Montreal being the favorite and Toronto kind of being the underdog, obviously, with all the circumstances too in the offseason with Toronto kind of getting plucked of their 16-win team last season. But I think Toronto's right there. I've been saying it since day one that they're. I don't know what's going to happen in this game. Like you, I'm excited to watch what happens in this game because Montreal look better than last year.
Yeah,
and I think Toronto still is that top tier team.
It's almost like a carbon copy of last year where the Argos had surprisingly won the Grey Cup, and then they just come out and like gamebusters for the regular season. Still early here, but yeah. And,
so I'm excited for this one. First place battle, like you said, there's also the aspect that it's a rematch of that East final that went disastrous for Toronto. So I know Coach Ryan Dinwiddie is going to be preaching that all week that we owe them one, right? And all the leaders on their team and Toronto's going to come out hungry. But who knows what'll happen in this one because Montreal's definitely bringing it.
Yeah. 4:30, note the start time at Pacific on Friday from BMO Field. Saturday, we've talked a bit about them. The 0-3 Blue Bombers going to 1-1 Calgary. I'm not ready to write off Winnipeg just yet, but man, these injuries. Dalton Schoen now heading to the sixth game. They're already without Kenny Lawler. They already have a couple of guys absent on defense. Whereas Calgary, I'd be curious to know Dave Dickinson's all-time record coming off a bye. It's like the Andy Reid of the CFL in that respect. Never bet against the Chiefs coming off a bye with Andy Reid. I can tell you that for free. That's all the gambling talk you'll get on here. But a tough spot for Calgary here, maybe. But if Winnipeg drops to 0-4, are you going panic button already? Like, what are you doing?
Poor Winnipeg, yeah. I mean, like you said, they're banged up, but they're already pulling out all the stops. I thought we got that last week with Chris Trevler.
Yeah.
Running at receiver, the two quarterback formations before they did it by default because they had no more receivers left in the fourth quarter. But that's something that I was watching the games back and Davis Sanchez brought that up at halftime is, yeah, Winnipeg was moving the ball, but it took them everything they had. It took them all these crazy play calls and they were pulling out every stop in week 3,
yeah,
which is definitely a concern. But I will always go back to this point. As long as Michael Shea is there, as long as Zach Collaros is there, exactly. As long as Brady Oliveira is there, do not count this team out. Do not take this team for granted. They played us right down to the end, even with all these guys already out of the lineup, right? So while there is definitely a rivalry there, and I think Winnipeg and Calgary do butt heads a lot too, and that should be always that fun rivalry. There's always, remember that viral clip on, I'm not sure there's any hatred involved in this, but the Winnipeg kind of ran with this clip with the Canadian Mafia clip where Dave Dickinson kind of muttered under his breath.
2018 Western Final. Mic, right? Yeah.
But, so there definitely is a little, I would say there's a little rivalry there, a little extra spice in the pepper when these two teams meet. So it'd be another good game. And unfortunately, someone's going to drop to a couple games below 500 at one way or the other, right?
Heartbreaking, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame.
All right, another Sunday for the Hamilton Ticats. We get them there next Sunday. So they're going with four straight Sundays, the Ticats. Hamilton is in Ottawa, and touched on it with Dave Campbell there a few minutes ago. I was cautiously optimistic that Hamilton could help us out on Sunday, but they fumble the opening kickoff. That's never good. Gave up a touchdown right away. What was it, four turnovers they had?
I don't know. Something like that. It was 14-0 before he blinked on that game.
Exactly. In Saskatchewan, in that environment, you're not coming back from that. I don't think so, even though we almost did last year. The Jake Dolagala game in Regina. Remember that? Ottawa, they're looking for a bounce back as well. After their week one win, everyone's saying, okay, maybe the Red Blacks could be a different story this year, but both these teams are going to be playing desperate, I would think.
Yeah, and this is a good test for the Red Blacks, right? They had that big opening season win in week two against Winnipeg. Looked really good. This new regime, right? Drew Brown, a kind of turn of a new page, and then kind of back to square one with getting, just dominated in week three. I caught the first half of that, and it's 30-1 for Montreal, and you're like, oh my God. You kind of do feel bad for Ottawa, right? They've been going through some hard times these past couple of years, but now they have an opportunity to bounce back, show that was a blimp, and they're moving forward with Drew Brown. But Ottawa did make a good second half out of the game. At least they showed some fight, which is encouraging too, right? So, but Hamilton, I kind of put Hamilton a little in the same boat as Edmonton, where they just don't look like an 0-3 team. Like they're not just getting Saskatchewan didn't go well, but I mean they had them in week two and they blew it. They're right there with Calgary in week one, I thought. But Levi Mitchell's been moving the ball very well. I think he's playing very well overall. Still got a guy like James Butler there that's probably roaring for the football. So,
yep.
Tim White's had these struggles too for them, right? And that's not like him. So expect him to get back to his CFL receiving leaders kind of status there. So, another one. One thing I like about, I could say, arguably all four games this week is they're hard to tell, right? They're all going to be competitive. Our coaches and our players always talk about that you can't take anything for granted, and I really feel like this week there's four games where you could see all eight teams winning if one team falters, right? If we don't play our best game on Thursday, Edmonton can definitely beat us. Same goals, I think, across the board, though.
Yeah. Well said. That's your week four in the Canadian Football League. All right, wrapping it up. Go for it. Punt. What are you going for?
I got some passionate ones this week, at least in the punt side. So usually, like these past couple weeks, I've been just kind of, we're kind of scrambling last minute because, I think times are good right now. So there's nothing that's been upsetting me. But there's one this week that I'll get to in a couple moments here that I literally wrote down on my phone notes when it happened. And that I'm sick of it, but I'll get to that in a minute. So my go for it is, I'm sure you saw this. We obviously had head coach Wayne Craney on last week from the international.
Warren Craney, yeah.
Yep. The head coach, yeah, for the under 20 World
you
Championship.
You said Wayne,
bad. Sorry, Warren. Head coach of the Team Canada for the under 20 World Championships out in Edmonton. They opened their tournament with 110-0 victory at Brazil. The final score graphic went extremely viral on social media. I think on Twitter it had 30,000 plus likes on it. So shout out Team Canada for delivering in week one for their opening game. And that was quite a thing to see on the timeline on over the past week.
Yeah, congrats to Coach Craney and company on a big win, and memo to Brazil. Maybe stick to soccer, eh?
Oh, they're trying. Warren was saying, there's
it's good to see all the, it's good to see all these countries. And what is it about, in the World Junior Hockey, when Canada beats Denmark 15-0, you see all these heroes on social media. Oh, that's bad sportsmanship. Oh, but yeah.
These athletes, too, they get one or some of them get one chance to play at
the stage. If Brazil grows from this, then yeah, so be it.
Yeah. but it's good. Good.
Congrats.
I think it was funny in the caption that he was convincing win, and it was like, you think?
Finals go this Sunday in Edmonton, Commonwealth Stadium. Good luck to Canada. All right, I'm going for it. A night at the ballpark. Doesn't matter. Could be Mariners, Blue Jays, Vancouver Canadiens. Going to see the Canadiens on Saturday with Sakaris and Price.
Nice.
And the crew. Saturday nooner at the Nat, as they call them. Went to the Winnipeg Gold Eyes game Thursday night. 5-minute walk, not even from our hotel. Went with Carolyn Cody, Stephen Chang, and a bunch of our coworkers, Liam Thompson as well. You were out with the family, so you did not experience it. They are playing there when we go back in a few weeks. I might go again.
I recommended it, actually, off the bat.
Yeah, you did, yeah. The Gold Eyes didn't get it done, but still, beautiful night, hot summer. Just can't beat a night at the ballpark.
No, Gold Eyes games in Winnipeg are fun. I can definitely confirm that. It's still something my buddies do. They go out to them, and it's fun to be outside. They got a great craft beer scene there. The food vendors are awesome. It's kind of like every amateur or somebody professional baseball park, right? And like you said, out in the sun, too. Makes for a good night. Not a bad backdrop, too, there. Hey,
not bad at all,
Human Rights Museum.
What's that? What is that? Is that, I was going to, that's a
Human
not
Rights
City.
Museum.
I thought it was City Hall
like
or something.
The tall, circle building. Yeah, it's a Human Rights Museum.
Okay.
Probably about 10 years old now.
Very good, yeah.
So, yeah.
Got it.
Nice little backdrop of Winnipeg. So Winnipeg's going up a couple stops in your guys'
just
ranking.
Might. Just might.
It was a good trip overall that made it. So
winning helps, yeah.
Do you want to go back-to-back here with your punt?
Sure. And again, I've never liked this, but saw it again last week. I'm all for Gatorade baths if it's a big milestone or a championship, but saw one last week. I think you know where I'm saying.
It's their second one this season.
Is it their second one this season? Saskatchewan? Yeah.
May have done it in week one, too. Week
one. You ever see Rick Campbell do one of those here?
No.
No, you haven't, because we're waiting for a bigger win. Anyway, that's just it. Not going to add any more details. That's
I'm 100% with you on that.
Yeah.
It's a little cringeworthy, not going to lie. I get that it's a monument and all that, but yeah, you save that one for the big one, right?
Yeah.
That's it. It's a big deal in the NFL because it's a big one.
Yeah.
And I think, you save that for the big one. You don't see Winnipeg doing that in June or anything like that, right? So, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
There you go. And you got a good one here.
The grand finale here, yeah. Like I said, I wrote this one down live when it happened. I was at the mall on Sunday, and I went into this establishment, fast food, quick food service place. But I've noticed this as a trend now across all these fast food menus when you go up to the drive-thru. What is up with the menus now? There's advertisements on them. So I walk up to this place and I'm trying to look at the menu because I don't even know what's on the menu. And there's an ad for a smoothie going on for 10 seconds. And I told the cashier, I'm just waiting for the menu to show up here because there's an ad that's swiping. And then there's two different pages now. So there's half the menus on one page and then it goes to a second different page. And by the time you, especially at a drive-thru, there's times where I'm looking at the first five options and then it swaps to the 6 to 10 and I was looking at 1 to 5 and I don't even know what I want yet. And now I have to wait because I don't know what I want. It becomes a panic and all that. So I don't know what's going on with fast food menus now. I miss the days where it was just the menu was static right there, the whole menu on one page. You didn't have to worry about it leaving or an advertisement popping up for a milkshake or something. But it's been driving me nuts lately. And it's something that it's a repeat offender because it feels like all over now these menus are swapping on me when I'm in a drive-thru or anywhere. And it's annoying.
I've not noticed that myself, but you explain that.
It is bad right now.
Went to a drive-thru the other night to get a little dessert and didn't notice it there. But yeah.
There's a really popular restaurant that I will not name that does it. There's a lot of them around here. Competing brand.
Yeah.
Does it.
Shame on them
for doing that.
Shame on them.
Not that I was buying anything from
Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons is good with that. I will say that.
Yeah.
The drive-thru on King George by Esso there is good with that.
Yeah, very good.
But other places, quit it.
Punt.
It yeah.
Punt.
Punting that. I got to read your menu. I want to know what I want.
Awesome. Ending on a good note, Lions and Elks, Thursday Night Football, Pure Later Tackle Hunger again. Another reminder, it's worth reminding, cash and food items for local food banks. Get your picture with the Grey Cup. The Grey Cup fan base, I was told, will be part of this as well. So if you're a fan, a season ticket holder who's bought your name on it, go check that out. All the more reason to bring a food bank donation and support Pure Later Tackle Hunger. Subscribe, rate, leave a review. Check out all of our content on YouTube, bclions.com. Going to talk to Andrew Pearson on BC Lions on Tap this week. Subscribe to the Lions Audio Network feed to get that weekly podcast. And let's go. Thursday night, another big divisional opportunity. And we'll be back next week to recap it all and look ahead to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. The Hammer in June, or in July, I should say. Not October like last year. First and Now, your official BC Lions podcast.